Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Well, did you ever? Well, did you ever? Well, did you ever?
Shot a rhythm.
big oven, Cajun bass, honky-tonk piano, make you feel good. Open your ears, rhythm and blue.
Rory Gallagher, Bullfrog Blues.
Yeah, who is Rory Gallagher? I'm hearing a lot about Rory Gallagher these days.
Well, I've always heard a lot about him because ever since I started playing, he has been there in my life. And, you know, he's such an incredible, explosive guitar player. And I know he's Irish, so when you say British blues, it's not, you know, politically correct to say that because he's very much Irish.
Okay.
But, you know, he had that sound. He was ripping the neck off. And on this track, I've got to talk treble boosters. That's all I can speak about. It's treble boosters. Because there's a lot of bullshit talked about treble boosters, right? And I think on this album, he used an AC30 and a Rangemaster, which we have. And we are manufacturing new Rangemasters under the Supertone brand. And, you know, there is nothing like a Rangemaster. They make your guitar sound like it's on fire, literally. And, of course, his looked like it was on fire. I think it was at one stage on fire.
There was definitely, well, I, as you know, I didn't really know anything much about Rory at all because I wasn't really into guitar players until I met you, and that is true. But when I watched a video of him the other week, there's some raw energy in him that makes his whole playing unique to him. He's got this intense, concentrated. I can't even describe
mojo.
It in words.
He's got a mojo.
He's got something.
He has it for that guitar. That Strat,
yeah.
You know, he rings it and he tries to kill it. You can hear it.
He's a bad boy.
And I mean, at that, he's playing slide over it. So I think it's a Telecaster he used with a capo. But, you know, he created such a ferocious sound. And he wasn't too worried about tunings and mistakes. I mean, the guitar at the beginning of the day was slightly out. And, you know, I listened to it and think, yeah, but does it matter? Does it hell? It sounds amazing. And talk to me about the bass player.
Well, I was just about to say, now that I know the guy's name, Jerry McAvoy, and you said to me a couple of weeks ago, I have a listen to Bullfrog Blues, and I just went, and it's just like, but it made me almost feel like I couldn't stand still. I mean, shaky. It just messed with my head. The energy from that track is just incredible.
Yeah, and the bass solo. I mean, he plays with a pick, doesn't he? And,
yeah,
but
yeah.
What I love about it is that he has that sound, you know, which you get with your high watt. It's a dirty bass sound, you know. It's got some growl to it.
It's got some attitude to it, hasn't
it? Yeah, you know, and you can hear Rory in the background, you know, egging him on. Yeah, you know, come on. Great, you know.
Explosive, alive, present. Like, I can picture a bar and just whiskey glasses going down the bar.
Or Guinness glasses, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, and chasers, the lot, just everything, you know, over the bar, being smashed, just and the crack as well, just having a really good laugh.
Yeah,
that,
fantastic.
It's all that intertwined. Well, that came from, it was a Live in Europe album released. It's his third album, 1972. And I love this bit because it said it was recorded in Milan, also in Florence, Ludwigsburg, and Luton.
Of course.
That
Milan and Luton. Holy moly. Oh, that I didn't know. That's fantastic. A great song. And that album, to me, I think he, you know, because I think I only own two Rory Gallagher albums. And that is by far my favourite. Again, it's live. Love live music and recorded like that, especially when it's got that energy. I mean, Messing with the Kid from that is a fantastic, you know, rendition. Absolutely fantastic.
The one and only Rory Gallagher.
Yeah. First heard that, it really changed my perception of what was happening in the 50s, because I didn't think that sort of thing happened in the 50s. And his attitude, it's got attitude, it's strident, and it's so slow. And I love his sound. It's like super distorted, super gritty. And as the track proceeds, he's gradually turning up the intensity on the tremolo on the amp. And at the end, it's going jugga, 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 jugga. It's absolutely fantastic. Seems such great atmosphere. And a big influence to Jimmy Page.
Yeah, because we saw that It Might Get Loud documentary, and he said that, didn't he, that Link Wray actually was a big influence in his early career.
He put the vinyl on, if you remember, he's talking about it. I think he was talked about a tremolo as well, actually. Yeah, so there you are.
And I didn't know as well that he was a Native American Shawnee rock and roller.
Neither did I, that.
So, yeah, very, very popular in the 50s. Now, that was his first hit, 1958. First release, actually, his first single. And guess what? It was banned in New York and Boston because for fear it would incite teenage gang violence.
Well, rumble, there you are. But it was that time, wasn't it, you know? James Dean and all those things, Rebel Without a Cause. You know, it was all that thing that was going on.
But there were no lyrics. So it was just a feel.
Yeah.
So the feel of the music was enough to psych people up. So they banned it, thinking that it would psych up the teenagers or the gangsters, the gangs.
Wow.
That's a bit odd, though, isn't it, to think that? Because usually these days it would be like, you know, like even when it was like Sex Pistols or something, it was always about a lyric, wasn't it? This band, bad lyric, band, can't say that, can't say that.
Yeah.
But that song, that's really surreal.
And without this song, it's unlikely that Pete Townshend would have ever have picked up a guitar, he said.
Yeah. And Neil Young, he's influenced Neil Young as well.
Blimey.
And Marky Smith of The Fall said that Link Wray and Iggy Pop were the two people that basically he ever looked up to.
Baby Baby by Donald Fagen from the album The Nightfly, full of LA session musicians. Well, session musicians from everywhere. Written by Lieber and Stoller. Great song. Drums by Jeff Porcaro.
Toto.
Well, yeah, and, you know, everybody's played with everybody. Larry Carlton on lead guitar.
Larry?
Yes, Larry Carlton, the man himself. And, you know, it's a host of brilliance. And Gadsden, apparently, James Gadsden, our mighty drumming man, he apparently plays additional drums on that. Now, I can't hear any additional drums, but right at the beginning, in the background, you can faintly hear some groovy hi-hats, and I think that might be him. But it's a rapture of production excellence.
A rapture?
It is. And I can honestly say that any record producer out there, when you put that on, I don't care who they are, I'll listen to it and go, oh my God, this is unbelievable. The detail, you can hear everything. Everything. Everything's in a sonic pocket. The drums are tight. The compression's beautiful. Roger Nichols did a masterful job. And Gary Katz produced it. Incredible. Fagen, apparently, is a nightmare to work with because he is so anal about everything that he does, you know. But what a great album. And it almost sounds like Muzak. It's so smooth. But my God, I love it.
It's incredible, actually. I don't know what else to say. My brother actually played me that album when I was when we were at home. It was like, have a listen to this. And it was like, and that I got into that album when it was released, which is fantastic, actually. So that has been a soundtrack in my life for a long time. One of the few albums I actually like that my brother played. I won't tell you the others. But Lady in Red. No, we don't do it.
No.
I was like, no waves. Go, no, listen. It's like, no. Even though I did go and see him live. It's okay. I know. But that was the first album that Donald Fagen, getting back on track, recorded without his co-partner, Walter Becker,
yeah,
and Steely Dan.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Dan, wherever, I mean, the production on the Dan stuff was incredible, and it was like a host of brilliance again in all those records. But this, to me, it really got Donald Fagen, in my mind, really focused on his own, you know, his own thing, and it was incredible. And it was the first, one of the first albums recorded on digital, wasn't it?
Yeah. 32-track, 4-track recorders, but they had loads of problems, apparently, aligning machines, because it was new technology. So they actually trained up themselves to align the machines, because it was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I remember using a Mitsubishi 32-track digital when they first came out, and it was like great. It was like 1-inch tape, and it was incredible. You know, you go, oh, it's all digital. And nobody knew what to do because they didn't know how far they could push it, because you can't overload digital, of course. You can't put too much signal on, because it actually physically hard clips digitally, and it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
You know, not like a tape machine, which will saturate, you know. So it was confusion. And it was at Revolution Studios with Andy Mack. That's who did it, the guy who remixed The Who.
My goodness.
Played in the last show. So there we are.
Bit of technology. And that's the fascinating thing as we go on our adventures through music and find out the stories behind the making of these beautiful songs, is that the role that technology has played and how it's influenced the sound and what people have produced as a result of what they've had in their hands and what they've created.
Absolutely.
I'll say goodbye to love. No one ever cares. If I should live or die, time and time again, the chance for love has passed me by, and all I know of love is how to live without it. I just can't seem to find it. So I've made my mind up, I must live my life alone, and though it's not the easy way, I've always known I'd say goodbye to love. There are no tomorrows for this heart of mine. Surely time will lose these bitter memories, and I'll find that there is someone to believe.
incredible, pure, beautiful voice of Karen Carpenter from The Carpenters and Goodbye to Love. What a song. What a voice. I grew up with that lady. I used to sing along with her all the time. She was my friend. Her songs are my friend. Mm. Friends, plural. I just love her voice. And she was a little bit depressed, though, in terms of some of the songs. All about love, weren't they? A little bit sort of depressing. Because when I found out this guy called John Bettis, who'd co-written a lot of songs with the Carpenters. So this guy, John Bettis, right, he wrote Crazy For You for Madonna. Michael Jackson, he wrote Human Nature.
Yeah.
He wrote for Diana Ross as well. But with the Carpenters, he co-wrote these songs. Goodbye to Love. I Need to Be in Love. Only Yesterday. Yesterday Once More. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I feel depressed. But he's saved by the song Top of the World. So it's like, I haven't got much more emotion, man. It's like, when are you going to lighten up? You know, because Karen Carpenter's voice is one beautiful way of taking you the emotion, the feel of what it's like to love and to be sad. And she just has that quality that really just connects.
Well, you know, to me, her voice is probably one of the greatest pop voices of all time. I mean, you know, me being completely into the old music and the production and everything, I've heard tracks where she's been isolated and it's just a voice on its own, and it is bang on, pitch perfect, absolutely beautiful. And the backing vocals, it's like a keyboard. It's that accurate.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, no messing about with autotune with that girl. I mean, no. She was right on the mother, you know.
And absolutely. She's a drummer as well. She was a drummer.
Kicks ass. Incredible.
Kick ass.
And, you know, I just want to say that these are tracks that we listen to at home. Everything that you hear on our shows are all about what we listen to every day in our house.
You want to share them with you?
Yeah, I want to share them. And, of course, I've got to talk about one thing.
I know what's coming now.
You know what's coming now, don't you? And all I've got to say is one word. Fuzz. The fuzz guitar on that is just stupendous. It's a beautiful sound, and actually played by Joe Peluso of the Instant Joy Band.
Tony Peluso.
Tony Peluso. Oh, there we are. Tony. It must be his brother. No, that... And when he was going to play something soft and gentle with the sort of the feel of the song.
Yeah.
And what's the other
Richard.
Carpenter? Richard Carpenter said, "No, go for it. You know, play something really, really." Mad, and I think the quote was, burn it up, soar off into the stratosphere, go ahead, it'll be great. And, you know, it growls, and what I love in the fact he's following the chords beautifully, and he's got it's not jazz at all, but it's so beautifully melodic, and that tone, you know, and it sets the record up against that big, fat bed of luscious, lovely vocal.
And you don't expect it either, really, so sort of tear-ass kind of guitar in the middle of this beautiful ballad, do you, really? And the story has it that Richard Carpenter couldn't stop crying. He was just so happy that Tony had, whatever his name, joking, Tony Peluso had actually, you know, ripped the arse out of it, basically, and had that feel, which is what maybe, you know, he couldn't do that because he wasn't a guitar player, per se.
Totally, absolutely.
So, Carpenters. Beautiful.
Yeah.
The Groundhogs and Cherry Red.
That was a really strange sound at the end. I wanted to leave that on because that's part of the track, but it sounds like the aliens are coming.
What do you mean? They're in the White House. Anyway.
Very topical right now. My God.
Yeah, Tony McPhee and the Groundhogs, a stalwart of the British blues rock scene. You know, he's been around, he seems to have been around forever.
It was interesting, actually. I don't know about this band at all. I don't know about Tony McPhee. Don't know about them. I just found out they backed John Lee Hooker in the mid-60s. And they went on to explore acid rock and prog rock during the 70s.
Yeah, it sounds a bit creamy, doesn't it, really? You know, i.e. cream with...
Yeah, they do actually say that. Sorry, do you know why I'm giggling?
Why?
Well, because of the name of the band, I literally just looked online just to see what they looked like. Because, of course, it's the Groundhogs. I wanted to see if they had any resemblance. And the thing is that Tony McPhee does a bit.
Sorry, Tony.
Sorry, man. He's hairy. He's got this, like, moustache coming down, of course. And then it comes up in the images, and there's Bill Murray with Groundhog Day as well. And we love groundhogs, don't we?
We do, yeah.
We watched the film the other week. It's really funny. But, yeah, sorry. It was just, I couldn't stop giggling. But, yeah, what a name of a band. You've got the Groundhogs, Cherry Red, from the 1971 album called Split.
Yeah. Engineered by Martin Birch.
Yes, and Martin Birch, as an aside,
he was
the engineer.
Everywhere.
Yes, he worked with everyone. I mean, this guy. Yeah, go on, say the list.
Yeah, well, Deep Purple, Wishbone Ash, Black Sabbath,
Iron Maiden,
Whitesnake, John Lord Rainbow, Jeff Beck, Peter Green, Canned Heat, everybody, basically. And how I know of him is that Derek Lawrence, who produced an album that I did with Little Brother for Polydor in the 90s, early 90s?
Yeah.
He was talking about Martin and the Wishbone Ash sessions, which Derek produced. You know, it was great, you know, great, real rock and roll conversations, you know, fantastic.
I like that. Some I love the stuff. Way these people, and the thing is that you don't really know about the people who are engineering, producing. Maybe you hear about the producers, and it's quite nice, actually, because the more stories we hear and we can tell you, the kind of, it connects everyone up together. There is this big family, you know, people behind the scenes.
Totally amazing. And what I love about that as well is that, and you don't hear it very often, but he was using an octaver, the guitar solo. There was like an octave effect in it, which puts a note, an octave above your note, you know. And it was a very old school analog thing. It was before, you know, digital, so they couldn't do it. It was like a splitter, a frequency splitter, and it's like a fuzz as well.
Yeah.
And I use it quite a bit on... In the sets, you know. And, yeah. And the great things just don't even very often. I listen to it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's nice.
The thing is that they also say about Tony McPhee is that he's virtually strangling his guitar through much of that album. It's like a tight, off-the-wall, heavy-duty power trio masterpiece.
Well, you know, that was done live as well, I believe.
Yeah, it was.
Until the end, obviously, they overdid that a bit. And I think there's some double-track vocal on, obviously. The vocals,
yeah, you can hear
on.
It when you listen in headphones.
Yeah, but it's really nice, actually. It's a great track, and, you know, Groundhogs, I think we'll be listening some more.
You know, I was wondering, you know, if you could keep on, because the force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like it makes me feel like
just rising up.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Michael Jackson, produced by Quincy Jones. And Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
That was my first album, you know, off the wall.
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you discount Pinky and Perky. I was given that. It was a hand-me-down.
Now, there we are, you see. This show is the measure of our relationship.
I was very proud of it. I was very proud of my Pinky and Perky album.
My first album I bought, of course, was in the hearing of Atomic Rooster.
Well, I'm not interested in Atomic Rooster. This is like, when you wish upon a star, you listen to that Pinky and Perky version, and there are beautiful harmonies. Okay, so the first album I actually was consciously wanting to have for Christmas, and my older sister Dawn bought me Off the Wall.
And very wise. One of Michael Jackson's finest albums, I think.
It's just crazy. I mean, I grew up with this guy, you know, and I remember seeing Dancing on Top of Pops, and I'd stand in front of the TV, you know, and I'd dance along with him and try and do all the moves in them as well. And I didn't realise that by the age of 21, he'd done 19 albums.
No.
Yeah. It was his fifth solo album, Off the Wall.
That is incredible.
Yeah. His first album was in 1969, and it was called Diana Ross Presents the Jackson 5.
Well, you know, what a history. And, you know, what an artist. It's such a tragedy what happened, you know. He was so... And Prince, you know, a similar sort of thing. A terrible, terrible tragedy. Because he was incredibly talented. Because when he was on form, you know, when he did Thriller and he's dancing.
Well,
my
the peak.
God.
It was the peak. And I recently watched a documentary about Off the Wall. And they were saying that it was a big thing for them to leave Motown. From as kids, they were with Motown, but Motown wouldn't give the band the freedom to produce their own music, to do what they wanted to do, because it was a formulaic thing. So they really sort of took a chance. And Michael, so studious, he'd watch Fred Astaire dancing. He just had all this energy, and he was just totally and utterly wanting to break boundaries. And he wrote notes to one of his friends just saying, I want to push boundaries, take it further, be the best, and just really just be beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and brilliant.
It won Grammys. He won Grammys. He was number one. It did everything, that album and that track, you know.
Yeah.
And so it should as well. It's a masterpiece of groove.
And the other thing as well, and this is something we've got to remember, is that, you know, during the time, at that time, people were writing him off, going, oh, you're just a child star. You know, you haven't made that transition. You're not good. You're not it. You don't have it. And it was when he was working on The Wiz that he was working with Quincy Jones, and it was like, okay, let's, you know, as they got to know each other, it's like, actually, this guy lit up the set. He was the film, you know. I mean, he was the best thing about the film. And I think it's very difficult, you know, to get people to accept you when you're a child star and to become of age and become your own performer, your own artist. Mm. I think he was very brave and very committed. I mean, he wasn't always famous, you know. I mean, he was famous to Jackson 5, but people wrote him off for a while as well.
That's right. Yeah, he went down before
exactly.
He came up, in, you know, to his brilliance.
Exactly. So he has, you know, he went on one beautiful, crazy, mad journey, really. A full life, indeed.
I was born in the desert, came on up from New Orleans. Came upon a tornado, so loud in the sky. I wheel around all day with the moon sticking in my eye. Yeah.
Beefheart and his magic band. Sure enough, and yes, I do.
Great name. I love that name.
What sort of show would it be without a bit of Beefheart on it?
Indeed. Well, yeah. That's from his debut album, Safe as Milk, 1967.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's cool,
so
eh?
Before Taj Mahal?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's cool. Apparently, it was heavily influenced by the Delta Blues. You can tell that, apparently, from the opening bars, based on Muddy Waters, Rolling in a Tumbling.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because the opening lyric, When I Was Born in the Desert, it quotes the new Minglewood Blues by Cannon's Jug Stompers. I love that. That's an early version of Rolling and Tumbling by Cannon's Jug Stompers.
Well, you know, I mean, he's a legend, you know.
Yeah.
Beefheart. And he went on to do some really unusual stuff as well. He really pushed the envelope. And I know John Peel was a big fan of Captain Beefheart. You know, he had him on a lot on the show and I used to listen on the
It's quite flavoursome for your ears, isn't it? Sort of hearty.
Yeah. Yeah.
A beef heart.
Yeah, very much so.
Also, this song's featured, or this album is featured in High Fidelity with Jack Black. And it's this comedic moment where this geek comes into the shop every week trying to buy Savor's milk and Jack Black refuses to sell it to him. He goes, here you go. He says, oh, well, how much is it? And he says, he takes it back off him and he goes, no, we're not selling it this week. And then the guy just goes, no, he gets upset, walks out the door and he sells it to his mate. I'm just saying he was too geeky to own it.
Fantastic.
Nobody's waiting by your side.
actually have to back announce this track. Layla, Derek and the Dominoes. I think everybody in the world has heard that.
Yeah, especially with Ed Sheeran doing a cover as well.
No.
Yeah.
Stunned silence. Simon Campbell stunned. Well, one of rock and roll's masterpieces, Duane Elbum on slide guitar, Carl Radle, your hero, on bass, Jim Gordon on drums, Tom Dowd, legendary Tom Dowd, producer, and recorded at Criterion on an API console down in Florida there.
Yeah, so that's incredible. When we watched the Eric Clapton Life in 12 Bars documentary, he was saying, you know, this is all tied up with his love for Patty Boyd, who was married to George Harrison at the time.
Mm.
And he flew out and did this album. And that's why it's called And Other Assorted Love Songs. And I think it was all an ode to Patty Boyd. And in the documentary, and I'll just say this one a little bit, when he gets back to London, he calls her around and she listens to the album and he said, "This is for you." And it didn't work. She didn't
oh dear.
Give a shit, excuse my French. I'm like, really?
That's incredible, isn't it?
Is that because she was married to a Beatle?
I don't know. You know, it was a very strange situation, that whole thing with Harrison and that triangle, that love triangle.
Unrequited love.
Yeah,
I know.
Incredible.
No, I tell you what it is, and it's none of my business, and I shouldn't really comment, and I don't mean to overstep where I think it's the right and fair thing to say. It's just it's not my place to understand necessarily, but it wasn't a documentary. And I just think if somebody wrote me a love song, I'd be like, oh, wow.
Mm.
You know, thanks.
Well, I'm more worried about the slightly out of tune slide solo
exactly.
at the end there with the legendary Duane Elbum. You know, and it always irks me that last bit because there is definitely, it's out of tune, I'm afraid. And when you hear it on its own, it's out of tune. And great song, and it's a moment history, but, you know, sorry, Duane.
Yeah, Duane. Anyway, it's the end of the show. I think we've run out of time.
No.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us for this week's show. If you want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Instagram, Starlight Campbell, Twitter at Susie and Simon, and of course on Facebook.
And the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio in the States. Please tell your friends.
Onwards.